The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So this evening I would like to first point out that it's possible to divide up approaches to doing Buddhist practice, or even mindfulness practice, into two sides, two ways. And one way is very roughly, one way is the effort to practice to attain something. So there's some goal, liberation, freedom from suffering. There is a possibility of developing mindfulness, attaining strong mindfulness, concentration. So people set out to attain something. The other approach is to allow something to be expressed, to express something. So attain something or express something. And they both have their time and place. It's not like one is necessarily better than the other. But I think that there's a tendency for people as they mature in practice to begin to appreciate more and more that practice can be an expression more than a goal-oriented approach to life. To try to get something. If I follow a path down a certain path, if I follow it along, then I will attain something. And that becomes less interesting with time. It becomes more, what's interesting is to allow something to be expressed. In Zen, they have a saying that to move forward with the self is delusion. To allow all things to come forth and tell you who you are, confirm who you are, is awakening. So here it's kind of very strong kind of separation between the two of them. But if you're the one who's a doer, who's going to do something, put yourself in the world, and that you're going to make something happen and practice and attain something, then they call that a kind of delusion. But if you make space to allow all things to surface and arise and be there, this is awakening. And so there's something very important about this idea that it's possible to practice, like meditation practice, mindfulness practice, Buddhist practice, be the allowing of something to bubble up from inside, as opposed to, so you already have it in a sense, and so it can arise, and you just want to allow it to express itself, as opposed to, I don't have it, I'm supposed to get it, and I'm going to work hard to try to attain something I don't have so far. And I think often in life, it's quite an ordinary and appropriate thing to set yourself on track to, you want something to happen, and you put together the steps to make it happen. If you're hungry and want to have dinner, you just don't sit down at the dining room table and say, let's just see what comes forth. And allow dinner to express itself. You're probably, unless you like tables, you're not going to get much to eat. And so you're hungry, and so you go and see what's in the refrigerator, and you start cooking and putting things together. And so by the time you're done, you've attained in a certain way. You've accomplished the making of a meal, and then you can eat it. So it's an ordinary approach, an ordinary part of life, that's this idea. However, often that becomes the default in how people see their lives and see themselves. They see that everything they're going to do is, that's in that mode of accomplishing, getting, doing, making it happen. And the idea that something as important as spiritual practice, something as important as a path to liberation, is less to do with doing than it has to do with allowing, can seem very, very foreign to the idea that people have to kind of work and attain and get. The One kind of analogy that's sometimes used for this, I don't know if it's a good analogy, but is going to sleep at night. I think most people, when they put themselves to sleep, or you know, lay themselves down to go to sleep, they might want to sleep, but it's not exactly something that you make yourself do. You create the conditions, and you allow for yourself to fall asleep. There's sometimes I've had trouble sleeping, and I've noticed that the more I try to put myself to sleep, the more it's important it becomes. I have to put my sleep, like, let's lay here really still, be really still, really quiet, and quiet my mind. The more I try, it seems that the more energy I kind of put into the system, and then less likely I'm going to fall asleep. I have to kind of allow the whole sleep thing to kind of happen. And to this day, I don't know how it happens. I don't know, maybe some of you know how it happens, but it just kind of, I'm blessed that it happens. But I have to create the conditions for it, and it can arise and happen. So anyway, that's one analogy for this way of letting something express itself or allow something to happen. There's a wonderful quote from a Japanese poet named Ikkyu. Break open a cherry tree, and there are no flowers. So this is very important in Japan. The cherry blossoms in the cherry trees. It's almost like the national, maybe it is a national tree, and it's a big deal in Japan when the cherry blossoms blossom, and people go from all over to go to certain locations to watch the cherry blossoms. It's like maybe going to New England to watch the fall leaves or something. It's very cherished in Japan, the flowers and a cherry blossom tree. Break open a cherry tree and there are no flowers. So you're desperate for flowers, so you take an axe, you know, to get those flowers out early. So break open a cherry tree and there are no flowers. But the spring breeze brings forth myriad blossoms. But the spring breeze brings forth myriad blossoms. And this kind of Zen kind of language, the idea of a breeze is symbolic for the Dharma, for some movement of life, that of goodness, of well-being, of freedom, that's there in the background, that's there to support us. And if you allow that breeze of the Dharma, the golden wind of the Dharma to move through you, then you will flower. So if you want to attain something spiritually, you can't really take an axe to yourself. You can't really kind of make something happen, as much as you have to wait and be patient to allow the cause and conditions of spring, the breeze, the sun, the warmth to come along. And then something, some little seed, some kernel of something that's inside can begin to, grow and develop and eventually blossom into a flower. So, and sometimes with spiritual life, you actually shortchange the whole process if you try too hard to make something happen. It's really a process of patience, of allowing. So same thing with meditation practice. If you try too hard to be a good meditator, it sometimes doesn't work. You have to kind of have patience, create the right conditions for meditation, be very patient, and make space and allow something to unfold. And this idea of allowing, of making space for, giving permission for, getting out of the way of, there are a number of teachers who love the expression, you have to get out of your way. And if you can get out of your way, then something can begin to unfold and move through you. There was a famous dancer, choreographer here in America named Martha Graham, and she wrote, "There is a vitality, a life force, an energy, a quickening that is translated into action. And because there's only one of you in all time, this expression is unique. And if you block it, it will never exist through any other medium and will be lost. The world will not have it. It is not your business to determine how good it is, nor how valuable, nor how it compares with other expressions. It is your business to keep it yours clearly and directly, to keep the channel open. You do not even have to believe in yourself or your work. You have to keep open and aware directly to the urges that motivate you. Keep the channels open. I suppose she wrote that for dancers. So it makes more sense, you know, most sense in that kind of context, perhaps art, dance, some kind of expression. But I think it's also nice in life in general that there is something that's moving through us, something that wants to happen, and a lot of it has to do, and it's unique, it's who you are, and what is it like to get out of the way and allow that to bubble up and to surface and come through us. I think that traditionally in Buddhism, there's a developmental model for growth, that there is a natural developmental unfolding of spiritual growth that can happen, just as the developmental models of childhood. That if children have the right conditions, then there's a various psychological and physical stages of growth that they go through. And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of hard to stop it. A joke that I did with my kids when they were young, I had to stop at a certain age, but they kind of loved it. I would say, you have to stop growing. You know, and I'd push down on their heads, stop it. You know, it's so nice. This is the perfect, you know, you were really nice when you were small. Let's get you. I'm going to hold you again. Come on. Stop growing. And they loved it. But then until it was stupid. Which is a developmental stage they come to. So this idea of developmental models, there's something here that can grow and move through us. And it's one of the things that I've been kind of in awe of in being a practitioner and being a teacher, is to watch the unfolding and movement of practice of human psychology, human heart, as it develops and grows, sometimes in spite of ourselves. And I say it that way because sometimes what's in there, what wants to grow and develop, is not what we think. And we might have ideas of what's supposed to be, ideas of who we're supposed to become or what we're supposed to attain, but it might not be the circumstances of who you are, your uniqueness to be that. Maybe no one really can know, but we try to create the conditions to allow something inside of us to grow and mature and develop. And so one way to look at Buddhist practice is that it's allowing this inner expression, this inner development, to unfold. It takes a lot of patience, and it takes a certain degree of trust, because it doesn't go along with the a utilitarian or acquisitive mode of life, of getting something, of spiritual practice. People who want to be efficient, because they want, you know, it'd be good to get, you know, enlightened quickly, because then you can just do more. Create a startup or two, or, you know, all kinds of important things to do, right, in this world. So let's get this enlightened thing over quickly, and, you know, get it done with and check it off so we can attain something more. And so the idea of acquisition, of attainment, of getting one more badge, you know, so we kind of become the right kind of person. And so we want to become acquisitive with spiritual practice, focusing on getting something, actually makes it hard to allow ourselves the patience and the time. And I like to think that spiritual practice is very inefficient. It has to be. Because as soon as we're being efficient, that we're actually kind of messing up the whole process of this quiet, shy, inner growth and development that needs its own time to grow and develop. So maybe I've said this story too many times, but for those of you who heard it, you'll allow me to say it for the benefit of those who haven't. The story, the way it's traditionally told, is that, you know, a young somebody arrogant, capable, competent, smart man, young man comes to the monastery, to enter the monastery to be a monk, and asks the abbot, the abbess, if I practice hard, how long will it take me to get enlightened? And the abbess says, oh, about 10 years. So that's like a long time. So he says, what? Well, I'm really capable. I can really apply strong effort. If I really make strong, adamant effort, how long will it take? Oh, in that case, 20 years. So there's something, so we have to kind of allow. It's counterintuitive sometimes, this practice, to sit and just be and allow. And then give enough time and space in meditation, for example, to see what wants to bubble up, what wants to happen. Now, one of the reasons why this works so nicely is that the sense of allowing, just letting yourself be and relaxing, is relaxing. And it begins to relax the tensions of the body. It begins to relax the tensions of the mind. And it begins slowly, just that sense of allowing and letting things be can stop the incessant feeding of the thought streams, of the whirlwinds or the whirlpools of thoughts that our mind is caught up in. And, and the busyness of the mind, jumping from one thing to the other, one web page to another, just wanting things and getting things, surprisingly enough, is something we feed by continually to do it. And so meditation is one of those things where we stop doing all that. We don't let ourselves kind of just continue to think the same thing over and over again. And we allow for something deeper to happen. We let go of the thoughts, make space, and allow for something else to happen. And so that those thought streams begin to relax and relax. And when the busy swirling of the thoughts, the chatter in the mind begins to quiet down, it makes space for some deeper unfolding, some deeper development to happen that, again, it can't be something we can orchestrate ourselves. We have to make room and make space for it. So a huge part of Buddhist practice is letting go. Letting go and making space. Not letting go just because we should let go of things, but it's more like letting go so we can allow for something to move and occur through us. Now, some people find that this, just sitting there and allowing and letting reality show itself to us, rather than being the one who wants to get something with an agenda, we let life just show itself to us in quiet meditation. We find that what we see at first is not good news. And it's not uncommon to notice a lot of our maybe neurosis, our strange thoughts, our unskillful ideas, our impulses, our strong unresolved issues in our life bubble up. All kinds of things can bubble up. And it can take a lot to want to be patient and stay with that, or to trust that it's okay to allow all this stuff to come up, all this sometimes unwelcome material from our psychology and our life story to come up and bubble up. And I've seen over and over again that the people who do this with some respect for the process and some continue allowing, keep opening up, that it tends to move through and work itself out. The knots in our life begin to unravel, the unresolved issues begin to heal, and some of the tensions begin to settle away. But it takes a while. So I wanted to read a passage from a Frenchman that was written somewhere between 1651 and 1715. So, I don't know, maybe a philosopher or a monastic or something. So he wrote, as light increases, and here's the light of awareness, as light increases, we see ourselves to be worse than we thought. We are amazed at our former blindness as we see issuing forth from the depths of our heart a whole swarm of shameful thought and feelings. We never could have believed that we had harbored such things, and we stand aghast as we watch them gradually appear. But we must neither be amazed nor disheartened. We are not worse than we were. On the contrary, we are better. Isn't that interesting? So as we see more of the, he uses languages I don't like to use. I like to sometimes say our shortcomings. That's a little more friendly, I think. But we start seeing our shortcomings, that rather than thinking we're getting worse, we're getting better because we're seeing it. There's something very powerful in becoming aware and self-aware of all this. Bear in mind, for your comfort, that we only perceive our malady when the cure begins. We only see the illness when the cure begins. So if you sit down, for example, in meditation, and what you notice about yourself is not good news. You're more restless than you ever could have expected. You have more anxiety than you knew. That, you know, you feel like you have much more conceit than you ever could have imagined. It's very caught up in ideas of self. Don't worry about it. The cure has begun. That's self now seeing that and allowing for it. But then it's best not to be reactive to it. If you then now judge yourself or get involved in trying to get rid of it, all that, and stop it as quickly as you can, then you're going down a different path of practice than the path of practice that I'm describing tonight as that which allows things to express themselves. You kind of get out of your own way and let it come. So if you're afraid, let it come. It's okay. See if you can help your fear feel safe. Make space for it. Allow it. Because it's trustable. If you can allow what's inside to bubble up in the field of awareness, non-reactive awareness, it's trustable. Something deep will happen. Something will unfold. If what arises is anger, meditation is a phenomenally helpful place, safe place to let your anger arise and be there, because at least while you're meditating, you're committed to not moving. So you're not going to punch anyone out or say anything you shouldn't be saying. So you can allow things to surface and be there. And things, when you get out of the way, getting out of the way means you have to be very careful not to keep feeding it, getting involved in those thoughts, but respectfully allow it to be there and get out of the way. That there, it tends to move towards health, tends to move towards settling and working through. It's a remarkable process. Eventually, what we can learn through this process is in the getting out of the way and allowing whatever's there just to be there, we can develop a strong sense of equanimity, an ability to be at peace with what's here. And part of that cure of the malady is the cultivation of the ability to see clearly what's happening and to see it with equanimity and peace. And some things don't go away. Some of the strange shortcomings we have in our mind don't necessarily disappear, but they don't become a big deal anymore. We're not troubled by them. The awareness, the light of awareness, or the equanimity or the peace, and we can hold them and be with them, become so strong that this idea of being an open channel and just being let it move through you without acting on it, without picking it up, they become kind of smaller and smaller, or you know, they recede. It's not such a big deal. When I first started meditating, I thought that, at some point after a couple of years of meditation, when I started kind of getting really serious about it, which is very dangerous to get serious about meditation. Meditation is so important that you shouldn't get too serious about it. Because I got serious about it and I thought, oh, now I have to kind of stop thinking so much. And so I was kind of batting my thoughts away. I had this image sometimes of playing a pinball machine. As a kid, I liked pinball machines. So I got that I was going to just be like, you know, treat my thoughts as a pinball ball. And I was going to bat it away, get it away, get it away. And it didn't help. In fact, all the ways and all the strategies I had to try to get rid of my thoughts just stirred me up more to think even more. And so the trick I learned was to step back, allow myself to think, not be troubled by it, but don't be involved in the thoughts. And that was the art. Don't be involved in it. And then I could let go of it, or they can let go of themselves. But just kind of step back, open up. Don't be involved. And this is a very tricky thing to learn how to do this, how to allow something and not to be involved, how to allow something and don't keep thinking about it. Don't think, kind of try to push it away, don't try to hold on to it, just be there. So this, you know, and then things become less and less of a big deal. They can still be there, and then, so, you know, so what? I remember there was a time in my meditation practice on retreat where I had a tremendous amount of physical pain in my shoulder. And it went on, it was a long retreat, it was a 3-month retreat. And so the pain went on for, I don't remember how long now, but it must have gone on for at least a week, because I had a series of interviews with my teacher, and those interviews about every other day. And it was excruciating pain in my shoulder. And I was given lots of instructions of what to do about the pain. And my approach to the pain was, both consciously and unconsciously, was to get rid of it, try to fix it, make it go away. And so I was given a lot of instructions of how to, you know, practice with the pain. And I was very dutiful. I tried them all, and nothing worked. In fact, the pain got stronger. And one of the things, the final instructions from the teacher was, be equanimous, cultivate equanimity. So I tried that. That didn't help either. And I was just at a wit's end. And I was doing all the right things, I thought, you know, like, you know, just let it be there, be equanimous. Don't make a big deal of it, you know, just whatever, you know, all the instructions that these poor teachers can give sometimes. And then I came to my teacher one day in kind of in desperation. I think I kind of barged into his room when I didn't have an interview. Just like, this is too much. I had to go find my teacher. I just barged in and said, it hurts so much. And so he listened to me one more time. And he just shrugged his shoulders. And he said, well, you know, probably in a former lifetime, maybe you stabbed someone in the shoulder. So I don't, you know, particularly believe in rebirth, but the whole thing. But when he said that, what my mind kind of immediately kind of had this thought, well, it's there because of reasons, but I don't have to know the reasons. And as soon as I had that thought, the pain lessened. It didn't go away, but then the pain was no longer a problem. And then I continued, went back to my practice, and after a few days it kind of faded away, but then it was not a big issue anymore. So was his little statement the cure? You know, or did what changed was my psychological relationship to it? I think that my unconscious drive to get rid of it was the very thing that was perpetuating the pain. And that when I kind of stopped the psychological neurotic concern about it, that was kind of deeply embedded in my psyche, then it kind of lessened up and loosened up and it didn't become such a big deal. So part of this practice is things don't necessarily go away, but sometimes we just change our relationship to it. We change in relationship to it. But sometimes there is a deep changing that goes on. So with time, what we're learning, just let things be. A sound happens, and it's just a sound. A thought happens, and it's just a thought. We don't have to react to it. We don't have to do anything about it. It's just a thought. An emotion happens. It's just an emotion, and we let it be. We don't have to be for or against it. We don't have to make meaning out of it. We don't have to predict the future about it. Just let it be. There's a sensation in the body, and we just a sensation, just simple, an ache or pleasure or something. Just let it be very simple. And this idea of just letting things be simple, allow them to be what they are, is kind of encapsulated in this very famous teaching from the Buddha. His teachings to Bahiya, a man named Bahiya. Bahiya, train yourself like this. In the scene, let there be just a scene. In the heard, just the heard. In the cognized, just the cognized. In the thought, and whatever's thought out, let it just be just the thoughts. That is how, Bahiya, you should train yourself. So that's the instruction. Just let things be. In the pristine simplicity of whatever arises in awareness, get out of the way. Allow it to be. You don't have to do anything about it. Now, when in the scene, there's just a scene, and the heard, just the heard, and so forth, then you will not identify yourself with it. You won't define yourself. You won't say, I am in relationship to it, in any kind of way. Or you won't even say, I am not that. I am that. You don't make any stories about who you are in the relationship to this, whatever's going on. So some people find it very helpful in meditation if there is pain, especially on retreat. Sometimes sitting in one posture for a while in meditation can hurt the knees, hurt for a while or something. And some people can notice a difference between, in the kind of mind's way of relating to the pain, a difference between calling it my pain or calling it the pain. When you say it's my pain, you've kind of identified with it, or you define yourself in relationship to it. And there's kind of more tightness or stress in relationship to it. But the pain, there's more kind of letting go or opening up or simply allowing it there. So when in the seeing, there's just a seeing, the heard, just the heard, the cognized, just the cognized, you will not identify yourself with it. When you do not identify yourself with it, you will not locate yourself therein. So you won't put yourself in the middle of it. When you do not locate yourself therein, this idea of locating yourself, it seems so innocent to say, I'm here, and you're there. I'm here, and the sound is there. But it turns out that movement of saying I'm here or feeling I'm here is a little extra. It's a little overlay on top of the experience. In the simplicity of experience, in the most simple way of being, and we don't identify with the situation, don't make any identification, there's actually no need to have a sense of location. We just are. So, when you do not locate yourself therein, it follows that for you, there will be no here or there. So if there's no location for you in the moment, because you're so open, so at peace, so settled, so not involved in identification, or defining yourself and wanting something, getting something, then there's this wonderful thing where the idea, the feeling or the idea or the thoughts of here and there disappear. Boundaries disappear. So it follows that for you, there will be no here or there or in between. And this will be the end of suffering. So this idea of not locating yourself, not identifying yourself, not needing to define yourself, can bubble up as you allow things just to be in their simplicity. So, and this is why in the Zen tradition they say that to let all things come forth and be as they are will tell you who you are, will reveal what's here. It's another way of saying the same thing, that you don't have to be anything. Everything that arises is you in a certain way, but you kind of disappear. Mind set free in the Dharma realm, I sit at the moon-filled window, watching the mountains with my ears, hearing the stream with open eyes. Every molecule preaches truth. Every moment chants the true teachings. The most fleeting thought is timeless. A single hair is enough to stir the sea. So this is a Japanese poet named Shutaku, expressing what it's like just to be here in a simple, open way. And it feels like everything, every molecule, every experience is teaching the Dharma, teaching the truth. Quite something to allow the truth to express itself to you rather than you going searching for it. So to what is it that wants to be expressed out of you? If you sit quietly and listen, sit quietly and be open, what is it that wants to flow? What comes? What arises? And then if you let it come in meditation, but keep yourself still. Let yourself be quiet. Don't move. Not because you're repressing yourself or restraining yourself, because there's something about meditation, letting the energies of your life move through you, where they can move more freely to unfold as they should when we don't participate in them, when we don't get involved in them. And so we don't, you know, like if you have, like for oddly enough, you know, if you feel like you want to dance, it's a beautiful thing then to let the inner movements kind of unfold as you dance. But in meditation, the dance happens in stillness, where we keep opening to the sensations, the feeling inside, and the compulsion to act on it is it one of those compulsions that we just sit there and watch the compulsion, because that also is something that needs, you want to make space for and let it unfold. But then you might think, oh, but I'm going to do the most beautiful dance. You know, it's going to be America's greatest dance. And, you know, I won't remember it if I don't get up and do it. And I'll lose my important dance that's going to make me world famous. Well, that's moving down the path of self, of identifying. The path of the Dharma is to let things unravel, unfold, open up, keep flowing without that needing to do anything. Just let it be there. So then you have to be patient with the compulsion and see what happens, see what comes. So what I found is that the Dharma practice, it offers a tremendously deep respect for ourselves, for what's in here, and for the world, and that we try to create the conditions to allow what's beautiful and wonderful to unfold. And in terms of our own self and our psychology, what's beautiful will eventually surface. The flowers will blossom if you can learn to relax, open up, and allow for the inner expression, allow for what's there to have its time without being for or against it, without needing to make stories about it or to judge it or to define it or define yourself in relationship to it. Just experience, just a moment. Just the anger, just the fear, just happiness, just an itch, just a breath, just the sound of the wind. Just this, just here. Let it, see what happens, see what happens. And for people who meditate regularly, like every day, it's a wonderful thing to allow this process to keep moving and unfolding. It takes its time. You need to give it time to let it kind of slowly, slowly do its magic, do its thing for us. And imperceptibly many times, you will be transformed and changed by this process of allowing what's here to show itself to you in awareness without you acting on it. Just being, seeing, feeling, settling into it. Letting things to unfold as they should. And in this process, I believe that you'll come to appreciate yourself and others, their beauty, their wonderfulness that we have. Here's one more Japanese poem. This one, the author is unknown. The world is a flower. Enlightened beings are flowers. Friends are flowers. Strangers are flowers. All phenomena are flowers. Red flowers, white flowers, green flowers, brown flowers, yellow flowers, black flowers. All the different kinds of colors of flowers. All the different kinds of love shining forth. Life unfolds from life and returns to life. Such an immense universe, so many beings, each a flower. Flowers of gratitude, flowers of sorrow, flowers of joy, laughter's flowers, anger's flowers, each connected to others and each making the others grow. When our real mind's eye opens this world of flowers, all beings shine. Music echoes through mountains and oceans. One's world becomes the world of millions. The individual becomes the human race. All lives become the individual. Billions of mirrors all reflecting each other. There is death and there is life. There is no death and no life. There is changing life. There is unchanging life. Flowers change colors moment by moment. Such a vivid world. Such a bright you. You were born out of these flowers. You gave birth to these flowers. You have no beginning and no ending. You are bottomless and limitless, even as you are infinitesimal dust. You are a flower. You are love. All beings shine out of their uniqueness. All melt into the oneness of colors. You are one. You are many. Only one moment, only one unique place, only the unique you. Besides you, there is nothing. You dance, appearing in all. You came from peace, and you return to peace. You stayed nowhere. You are nowhere attached. You occupy everything. You occupy nothing. You are becoming the indescribable change. You are love. You are the flower. So you can't break open the cherry tree to find the flowers. But if you let the gentle breeze move through you, you a flower. You are a flower. So two paths. The path of acquisition, of attainment, and the path of expression. Both have their time and place, but for today, I want to just kind of point you in the direction of appreciating the wonderfulness of letting things just express themselves in the quiet, settled mind of meditation. So, thank you all.